Chief! Whoa. Time to go hunting.
Bit early, isn't it, Doug? Right, grab a spear.
Oh, it's pointy.
Change your underpants today?
Yeah, changed them with dongle.
Never mind.
Shush, everyone.
Excellent.
The Edge of Stone is over. Long live the Edge of Bronze.
Hey!
Where have you been, the Stone Age?
I've got to save the tribe.
Hi, Peter, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very good.
Thanks for taking the time to have a chat with me this morning.
That's absolutely fine. Pleasure.
I've just gotten off the phone with David as well, so we'll just jump straight into it.
All right, okay.
You're on the film as a producer, so what exactly is your role in this one?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's the least glamorous role, isn't it, really, producer? What do we do? I am a sounding board and an objective voice for Nick particularly, all the way through. In filmmaking, there's a lot of different producers that do different things. Some look after the money, some look after the logistics and organization, some are on the creative side. I'm effectively on that side. I'd be a sounding board, giving advice, giving comments, giving reactions to Nick, those kind of things, for a long time. Then towards the end, I did get much more involved, a little bit sort of firefighting, because towards the end, these things... It's a big old deal, you know. It's a mighty machine which is thundering along, and at a certain stage, there's too much to do for the whole team. So I did step in and was quite involved in the latter stages in trying to help the trying to get ahead of Nick with editing, in particularly, and some storyboard and stuff like that. But the creative decision, the creative final choice was always his. But I would like offer things up, you know. I could try things out and show it to him, and he'd comment, and he'd reject what I'd reject. But maybe that's partly. Sometimes that helps you get forward, you know. You know when he can say, yeah, not that.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Then you can move forward. Yeah.
So for a movie such as this, obviously you'd have no shortage of actors knocking on your door to work on an Aardman film.
No, they'd be very happy to do that.
What is the casting process like?
Yeah, it's very gratifying, because you're right, because most people take it seriously, you know. They may possibly not be available. They may possibly not like the script, but they'll surely take it seriously. Obviously, in this one, the biggest Doug, because he's the lead character, Eddie Redmayne, was a key one to get. And I know Nick pretty well, and he wants a good funny act, a good and a funny actor. Let's take that for granted. Yeah. But the other thing, he loves a voice with some texture to it, something special. He'd seen Eddie, he'd seen him somewhere doing this more kind of semi-working class voice. It's not strong, but you know, Eddie can play posh, but Nick had seen him doing this more modern voice, actually, and he does a thing where he kind of he sort of rolls his R's, and he sort of softens them a bit, like I have to copy it. Nine is just cheap. It's like a W. The R is almost like a W when it comes out.
Yeah.
I think it was that Nick, you know, he loved that. The other thing is youthful, because Eddie, I guess he's 30 something probably, but he behaves in person incredibly youthful. He's just he's absolute dynamo of life and energy, and he sounds young, and that's great. So that was. That was an easy one. Maisie was a great find. Again, youth was very important there. And Maisie was great because she was right. She was really into it. And, she worked pretty hard to find this kind of vaguely Scandinavian accent that Nick wanted. And Maisie actually, some actors just tip up and look at the script and do it. But she'd actually put quite a lot of work into finding that voice, which was great.
Yeah.
And Tom was just, marvellous. I don't know what it was they could see. Maybe Loki, as a great bad guy. You know, he was a great bad guy. And he did. Again, he played with the voice. You know, he did try sort of a classic English voice for news, but Nick wanted the comedy French accent, and Tom was brilliant at it.
Yeah, he was. He was really good. Now going back a bit, so we're going back to the days of you and David starting the company up yourselves. Did you always want to be an animator?
I can't remember ever wanting anything else. That is true to say. I mean, the stupid thing is we started so early. We started when we were like 16 or 17. And so I think this is the way to put it, that I started doing it before I knew that's what I wanted to do. But then having done it once, I think I was probably hooked from the first time I did it. So that sort of famous time on the kitchen table we first experimented with animation. I think I was pretty hooked. Because the thing about animation is it's a wonderful, magical, powerful thing, because you bring something to life. I mean, while you're doing it, it may be slow, but briefly you're a god because you're in charge of the world entirely that you're creating. And so I think I was hooked very early on.
Now, I also asked David this question. Why did you want to make films like this? Why did you want to make stop-motion films?
Well, gosh, it's funny. It's interesting. It's a huge question, isn't it? I think, again, he probably told you, we started out doing drawn animation, what was then mainstream conventional drawn animation.
Yeah.
And we weren't very good at it. We weren't very good at it, and it was difficult and slow, and it wasn't going anywhere, frankly. And in slight, not desperation, because we were too young to be desperate, but we were sort of looking around wildly for something that would be better. And we landed on this puppet animation thing, especially using plasticine. That was unique at the time. I found it way easier than drawn animation. It just suited me somehow, the way my brain was wired. For me, it was almost instinctive to do it, so that was a huge advantage. It was instinctive, it was relatively easy, and this is the big thing, nobody else was doing it at the time.
Yeah.
So from being, we were very, very small fish in a very, very big pond. When we were doing drawn animation, but when we moved on to three dimensions, we were the only fish in the pond. So that was a great position to be in. And so by doing it, I came to love it, and it became our thing. You know, that's just it. So,
that's exactly right. When you say the name Aardman, like everyone knows who that is. And then if you say Wallace and Gromit, everyone knows who that is. I grew up watching Wallace and Gromit. So for me, being able to talk to yourself and David, like I'm pretty chuffed. Like this is a bucket list item.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So why would we change? I mean, if we couldn't sell what we do, you know, that would be terribly, terribly sad. And then, I'd maybe do something else. But as long as we can, as long as people appreciate it, you know, as long as people like you, like yourself, the audience, love it because it's handmade, you know, because it's full of humanity, I think, what we do, because it's handmade, I think. And I think that luckily for us, that comes across. I mean, that communicates to the audience.
Well, the thing is, you guys keep kicking goals with your product, like you Shaun the Sheep and Pirates and all that. Like, you keep kicking goals with it. So that's the thing. People are going to keep coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, like now, you know, everyone's finished Early Man, and they're all, you know, everyone's lying back and they're, you know, putting their feet up and having a little hole there and stuff. But me, I'm right back into it again with two more projects which are imminent, which are, you know, pretty ready to go. And then beyond those two, the third one, the fourth one, the fifth one, they're also, you know, good scripts are ready to go, so no rest for me.
Do you look back on your career, though, and go, wow, look at the career we've had from when we were 16 years old? Because it's incredible.
I think that is amazing, you know. Yeah, it is really amazing. I mean, because, I'm not a businessman at all. You know, I'm a creative person. We did what we wanted to do. We did what we enjoyed. And amazingly, it's, you know, paid off big time.
Yeah.
It's worked, you know, and like you're saying, you know, the fact that I can say, oh, yeah, yes, that's my company. We did Chicken Run, you know, we did Wallace & Gromit. You know, that's an enormous source of pride. I appreciate that very, very much, you know. I know how lucky that is. Mm. And I think, wow, we worked out really well.
Now, how do you think computer graphics has improved your animation, though? Has it helped you guys a lot?
Yeah, it has, actually. It makes our business much easier, actually, as well. I mean, the fact that all our cameras are digital now, you know, you can imagine, when we made Chicken Run, all our cameras were great big blocks of steel with those Mickey Mouse ears on top, you know, like the classic movie cameras. That's what we used. Now we use little thing that looks like an SLR, just an ordinary domestic camera. But the digital capture of the image is so amazing that it makes life much safer and easier. In the past, back in the Chicken Run days, if something went wrong on the set, if there was an accident, like a little one, like something in the background falls over or it shifts when it shouldn't shift or something like that, or something goes wrong. In the old days, that was a disaster. Ruin the whole day, ruin the whole week because of that had gone wrong. It was so difficult to fix. Now, in the digital era, if something like that goes wrong, you just laugh it off. You know, it's no problem at all. We can just fix that in post production. I love that. It's funny, in Early Man, the big stadium scenes, you know, that. You could have done that stop motion, but. God, it was in such a labour. You know, it would have added months and months to the whole. And because you couldn't, you know, nobody could afford. I don't think you could afford to build 20,000 puppets, however many there are. So you'd build 1,000 puppets, which would be very expensive, and you'd have to animate them on the left side of the screen. Then you'd have to move them across. To the middle of the screen and animate it again, and it would just take forever. So, and you wouldn't do it, would you? You wouldn't do it. But so we do. That's what we do. We have the real fully animated puppet animation puppets are front and center the whole time. But So there's big background crowds. We're very happy to take what the technology has to offer. Yeah.
Whatever makes your life easier. But, Peter, we're going to have to wrap it up. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to me, and good luck with the release of Early Man. I'm sure it's going to be another crazy successful film.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Pleasure.
Thanks, Peter. Pleasure.
Bye now.
Hi, Darren.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Fantastic. I really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with me this morning.
That's okay.
Let's go back a little bit first, because I want to know a bit about yourself and how Aardman came about. But first thing is, where did the name Aardman come from?
It's a silly schoolboy story, really. Do you remember a show which they had in Australia called Vision On? Show for kids.
Yep.
Sort of aimed mostly at deaf kids.
Yep.
In our youth, Pete and I, we met at secondary school. And to cut a long story short, we were offered the opportunity to do a little insert, some insert material for Vision On, which used lots of sort of high-end amateur animated material.
Yep.
Being a kid's show, it's quite cheap. And we were playing around with 2D animation at the time, drawn animation, and came up with this character who was a sort of idiotic superhero, you know. Wore his underpants outside his trousers, but he was a complete idiot, had no real superhero powers. And we came across this word aardvark, and we kind of wondered how many A's could a word have. We just thought it was a very funny word. It's, you know, it's a South African anteater kind of animal.
Yeah.
And when we came to naming this character, we thought, let's call him Aardman, you know, as in aardvark, Aardman. It's just a stupid name. And, of course, we got a check from the BBC for this first sequence that we'd shot, Aardman and the Hole. And we had to bank it. You know, we thought, what do we do with this 25 quid or whatever it was we got? So we thought, do we call it, you know, Lord Sproxton Animations, which is probably what we should have called it, or Dave and Pete or something like that. And we eventually thought, well, it's for this character, Aardman. Let's call it Aardman Animations. And we discovered, as schoolboys, I think we must have been, I don't know, 16 or 17 or something at the time, that you could register a name at company's house, and you'd get a little bit of paper, you know, with a sort of logo embossed on it kind of thing, which gave you a sort of quasi-official status.
Yeah.
And this was meaning about 3 and 6, you know, literally a dollar or two. So we thought, oh, let's do that. Let's register this name as a schoolboy laugh. And so that's how Aardman became Aardman. Aardman Animations Limited, as it was originally, as a schoolboy prank, and the name stuck. And some years later, when we were doing a lot more TV commercial work, there were companies with all sorts of crazy names, you know, Cucumber, Cracto, V-Stein, Piaz, you know, this sort of stuff in Soho in London, all these sort of sexy little animation shops.
Yeah.
And we sat down for 3 or 4 days thinking, should we change our name? And at the end of it, we couldn't think of anything better than just saying, sort of, we'll just call ourselves Aardman, keep at it. So that's how it's one of those schoolboy things that end up sort of stuck with, but it seems to work.
That's great, and everyone knows Aardman. Like, everyone knows that name.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. On to Early Man. I watched it. I got access to a screener, and I watched it last night. I absolutely loved it.
Great.
Absolutely loved it.
Great.
Where did the idea of Early Man come from?
Well, the initial idea, it came from Nick. I mean, it's very much Nick's film. He came up with this idea, which is sort of in the prologue bit, that, you know, the origins of football, that which you see sort of in the prologue. And we thought, actually, this is a funny idea. You know, how can we extend this? What can we build on? And it's, you know, it's a story. In my mind, it's a story about conflict resolution.
It is.
Between two different cultures.
Yeah.
Through a crazy game. But it, you know, Nick has this incredible ability to come up with what are nuggets of ideas that you work with, and you know, works with writers, and wonderful characters and scenarios. And so you build on that. I mean, the writing of all our films is the longest bit of the process. I mean, this one took, this has been knocking around Nick's head for what? Probably actually about 7 or 8 years, to be honest.
Wow.
We weren't full time on it for that amount of time, but in terms of it knocking around his head, and then we buckled down to it, I suppose, 3 or 4 years ago, whenever it was. And that's how it works, you know. It's a little bit like, you know, Chicken Run. He came up with this wonderful idea, an escape movie with chickens, and you think, oh, that's a great idea. okay, let's build on that. Let's work that story up and see how much fun we can have with it.
So once the script's done and dusted and you guys start to go into production, how long does it take from creating the characters to the finished product?
Yeah, well, the whole process. I mean, if you discount the couple of years where this idea was knocking around Nick's head, but we weren't really, as it were, developing it full time, the process is sort of probably around four and a half years, of which, in this case, the shoot was, I think, 14 months,
wow.
If not 12 months, I think. So the actual shoot is, you know, the shortest section of it, partially because you've got a lot of people on it and you need to make, you've got to kind of crack the whip, you've got to get through it because you're hemorrhaging cash otherwise. Yeah. The longest part of it is the writing, the storyboard and the character design and all that, and actually getting the story right. Actually, the story writing very often continues into production. You often haven't finessed the script precisely before you actually start knowing that, you know, you've got a few months grace, as it were, just to finesse, say, I don't know, act three or something like that. We always say to ourselves, let's absolutely lock the script before we start because you know what you're doing. And in our own heads, we sort of do, but as you go along, as the story gets made, you make changes and things change. So you're always, and the other big studios will say the same, you're in production, you know what you're doing, but actually you're making changes all the way through.
Well, I suppose you've got to be somewhat flexible because slight things may change and you need to mix it up a little bit to suit what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
How big are the sets that you guys build? Because on screen, they look incredible.
Well, I mean, oddly enough, on this one, because these football scenes, some of the sets were actually, from our point of view, pretty damn big because they were, you know, it's kind of half a football pitch on a model scale.
Yeah.
A lot of them are classically tabletop size. The interiors in particular, you know, Neith's sort of Bronze Age den, his office.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you've been to see the Acme exhibition in Melbourne that we had over the finished, yeah, ran in your, well, in the, what I would call the summer, June to open last June. I think it's just about to finish, actually. But there are some lovely sets there. And very typically, you know, if they are interiors, three walls, or even, for example, the podium in the stadium where Newth makes his announcements, all those kind of bronze megaphone things, that set's probably about, I don't know, a metre and a bit wide, and probably about a metre deep. Oh. A lot of it was against blue screen that we added in the rest of the set extension in CG. But on this one, things like the Badlands, that was a very big set from our point of view, to get that perspective, that lucky stuff. And in fact, some of the jungle sets were pretty big. So probably, I'm trying to think, yeah, probably some of the biggest sets that we've ever had, to be honest, on this one,
wow,
just because of that expansive nature of the outdoors.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. I live on the other side of Australia, so unfortunately I haven't had a chance to go see that.
Right.
Going back to when you and Peter first started out, why did you want to make films like this? So what was it about this sort of filmmaking?
Well, Pete's, you know, very creative guy. He was always sketching characters and stories. My father was a documentary producer in the BBC,
yep,
and a keen amateur photographer. So I had this sort of camera production, bit of storytelling sort of head on. And we discovered we had this sort of classic, in a way, producer-director. You know, we had complementary skills. We would write stuff together. Pete tended to sculpt the characters. And I would do, you know, the technical stuff, the camera work, the producing side. And I think what we found that very, very early on, that, you know, if you're into making films, if you can do live action stuff, you've got to pull together quite a lot of people, you know, actors and all sorts of other people, and it becomes quite a big number. With animation, you can do it on a much smaller scale, and you don't need to have so many people involved. I mean, having said that, you know, the films that we now make, hundreds of people are involved, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
But I think what we've seen is, particularly these days, with digital cameras and a laptop, you'll see kids, you know, making really lovely stuff on their own, kind of in their bedroom. They love making the models. They like coming up the storylines. They like animating it. It's a sort of all-encompassing pursuit, because the model making in its own right is good fun. And I found creating these little scenes and lighting them and shooting them, you know, that sort of sense of disbelief that all film is, you know, it's a conceit, isn't it, that you create. And it was kind of controllable. You didn't have to worry about actors turning up or not turning up. You know, we did a lot of films for Channel 4 based on documentary soundtracks.
Yeah.
But then we completely recreated the characters and the sets. So I think early on, we both found it intriguing. Pete would certainly say that seeing his models, being able to imbue a model with life and character, you know, Morph is a classic example of a very simple character, but he has incredible personality through his animation. And I think one of the things that we found, although I don't think we articulated it for years and years and years, was the ability to make the audience believe the character was thinking, even though this character is, you know, a lump of clay or a simple model, a puppet really, that you could bring him to life, and you could, a bit like Gromit, you know, you can really understand what Gromit's thinking, even though he doesn't say anything. That, I think, we found very exciting and very interesting.
Did you ever want to do hand-drawn animation instead of the stop-motion?
We did a bit of it way, way back, and because it's only two of us, I mean, in those days, you were talking about drawing on paper, tracing onto cell, you know, painting it. It becomes a process, and actually it's quite a tedious process. These days, with 2D animation programs, it's actually a lot less tedious. He's much better draftsman than I am, let's put it that way. My mother was pretty artistic, my brother and sister are pretty artistic, in terms of the drawing and stuff. And for whatever reason, that gene slightly missed me out. Maybe it was to do with application, maybe my head was in other spaces. But I think having done some of that, and we did 13 little one-minute episodes of Aardman, the 2D character for that show, Vision On. Some of it was drawn, some of it was more cut-out-y, cut-out animation. What we found, I think, was that we actually found the cut-out work, because it's a bit more spontaneous, and you're making it under the camera as opposed to drawn animation where you were effectively making it as a process with cells, then you go to the camera, and then the camera process is just shoot the stuff, follow the dope sheet.
Yeah.
Don't vary from that. Actually doing stuff under the camera where you could be a bit more spontaneous, I think, appealed to us. And then we sort of made that leap into doing clay work and initially gas bas relief clay and then little clay models. At which point, that sort of sense of performance and spontaneity really came out. As I say, we can probably articulate it better now than we could all those years ago, but I think that's what we found. It was just a lot more fun at every stage doing the model stuff.
Yeah, I suppose
I think if Pete was starting now with the software that we have and a laptop or whatever, he would probably have done an awful lot more 2D animation, to be honest, because his sketches as a kid, as a young man, as it were, in his teens, very, very figurative, really, actually a lot of very, very detailed figurative sketches he used to draw, and a lot of sort of strip cartoon things. He was very influenced by strip cartoons and that sort of storytelling, and I think if it was today, if he was sort of 16 today, he would have dived into Toon Boom or whatever the programs are. And done a lot of 2D animation.
Just to finish up, one of my writers is a big fan, and I asked her if she wanted me to ask you anything. And she came back and said that she wants to know what the most difficult piece of animation that you can remember before the days of digital effects. What was one of the most complicated things that you had to do?
Well, it was always difficult getting characters to sort of jump up in the air or fly. You know, models have to, you know, they're still characters, they tend to be rooted to the set, but, you know, that people talk about tie downs, they're literally, their feet are often screwed to the ground. And we did quite a lot of, you know, commercial work in the pre-digital age, and getting things to look as if they are lighter on their feet and jumping, that kind of stuff, when you had to kind of suspend them on invisible thread, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Those were the tricky things. Without a doubt. These days, you can put all these mechanical rigs in, you can hold them really well, and then you can just take them out effectively in Photoshop,
want
for a better word. But, you know, you could, with all the digital trickery, life's relatively easy to get. And I think we've seen that in model animation. You've got fantastic expression now, fantastic performance, which was much harder to do in the days of sort of analog film and pre-digital techniques, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
The core skills, you know, the facial animation, you know, the expression, that almost has remained unchanged. The ability to kind of put expression and emotion into the characters' faces and bodies, we can be much more ambitious in what we do with, you know, say fight scenes, jumping up and down, flying, all that kind of stuff is so much easier to do now. That it frees us up in terms of storytelling quite a lot.
Fantastic. Well, David, thanks for taking the time to have a chat with us, David.
Thanks, Dan. Okay, keep well.
No, thank you. Venus this way. So throw your sticks and throw your stones, because you ain't going to break my bones. Huh? If I'm a sinner, then I don't feel ashamed. A caveman? A caveman?
You leave my tribe in peace.
How dare you? Oh. I'll take him away and kill him. Slowly. Ah, idiots.
If we win, we can have our valley back.
And if we don't beat them?
We'll spend the rest of our lives working down a mine.
No! What's a mine?
You're pretty brave, caveman.
Whoa!
And stupid.
Ooh,
I can help.
No, no, no.
Hognob, you stay. I don't want to attract attention.
Ah!